The future is now. Artificial machine intelligence is playing an ever greater role in our society. My guest on today's 15 with the author is Austin technologist and inventor Amir Hussain with his debut book, The Sentient Machine, The Coming Age of Artificial Intelligence, which poses the question, should artificial technology be feared or embraced? Welcome to the show, Amir.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
You have been into computers since the Commodore 64. What was it that excited you? What did you see when you discovered the computer?
Well, when I came across the first computer that I saw, it was connected to a TV, because back in those days, these home computers didn't come with dedicated monitors. Usually, they were just connected to whatever TV you had at home. And what I saw was that this device, you could just, you know, play with the keys and type things in, and you could control what appeared on the screen. And prior to that, my experience with TVs was that you didn't really get to decide what showed up. It was whatever programming was scheduled for that time. That's the only thing you got to see. So this idea, you know, to my four-year-old brain, that this computer could change something that was fixed and make it fungible. That was the first introduction that I had to this idea of programmability, that with computers we can build these realities, these virtual creations, and really the flexibility of being able to do that with a computer is so great and so vast, and that's something, of course, that I discovered in the many years that followed, and I continue to discover that to this day. That really was an idea that captivated me and just captured my attention. And it's been sort of a magical enchantment ever since.
Well, and what's interesting is that too many, with all the advances, the thought of artificial intelligence is frightening. It's conjuring up machines with no feeling, no soul, if you will, taking over mankind. Yet, as I started reading The Sentient Machine, one of the first things that struck me was your medical story and what computers can do that all the human thinking cannot.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, there's two things that I'd like to say there. One, of course, is that our own conception of who we are, historically, if you think about it, we're very enamored of ourselves. We think we're very important. Over the ages, we've discovered that, you know, we thought we were literally the center of the universe, mm-hmm. and it turned out that we weren't. And then we thought we were the center of the solar system, and it turned out that we weren't. And then this brilliant man, this great American, Carl Sagan, wrote The Pale Blue Dot and showed us that we really live on an infinitesimal little dot that really you can't even see the moment you start zooming out in this great, gorgeous, grand universe. And all of us that have ever lived, all 100 billion of us, have only ever seen this tiny little speck of nothing in a great grand universe. So yet our conception of how important we are and what we are is, of course, quite substantial, and we're very proud of what we are. Of course, I am too. I'm a human being, and I think at the end of the day, you know, humans built computers, humans built programming languages, humans wrote the art of war, and humans wrote poetry, and everything that exists in the body of knowledge we did. That's mm-hmm. certainly something to be proud of, but it's not something to hang your hat on. Mm-hmm. And to look at artificial intelligence as the other, as opposed to our own creation, the expression of our own prowess of being able to build things that can in turn build things, things that can exhibit intelligence and perhaps semi-sentient qualities. That's something to be proud of as a human product, mm-hmm. as opposed to looking at it as the other.
Which is an interesting concept when you talk about it as in a role of creation. Because we all have in our religions various creation stories.
Absolutely. You know, the creation story in the Abrahamic religions is actually quite similar. And in the Torah, the Bible, the Quran, the idea is that, you know, God created Adam from clay and breathed into him of his spirit. and animated Adam. And then what distinguished Adam above the prior creation was the fact that, in this creation parable or myth or whatever you want to call it, in this creation story that's part of many religions, that God imparted to Adam the ability to know the nature of things. And it was that ability to decide to act with free will and to acquire knowledge that separated Adam amongst creation. So this is not about me going off on a religious tangent. It's just mm-hmm. that stories like this are so important to who we are because they've persisted throughout, you know, our culture for thousands of years. And so as a consequence, they are part of our thinking. Whether we are religious or not, that hardly matters. It's a cultural reality that this is how we think where we think we came from. And so in that context, if you think about now where we are at the point where we get to create things, where we have improved our capability and we've taken that perhaps God-given ability to acquire knowledge and brought it to a point where we can now start to do things that improve our stature as creators and designers and inventors and perhaps a species that can give rise to another species. That to me is not all about, fear and the Terminator situation materializing or mm-hmm. us losing all our jobs and not being good for anything and, you know, becoming a real world version of the Wall-E, Pixar movie. I think it leads to many doors opening and it leads to us expressing our creativity in ways that we've never been able to do before. So there's a huge positive, at least in my mind.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that because I think it's coming, whether we are prepared or not, simply because of the movement that has happened in the last, decade. There's been leaps and bounds progress. We are talking with Amir Hussain. He is the author of The Sentient Machine. And one of the things that, I'm reading through your book, and I'll admit right off the bat that there's a lot I just really don't understand. I'm not a computer person. However, I was looking through there, and I really have to ask you about something. What's the whole thing with Bitcoins? They confuse me.
That's a great question. So yeah, I talk about Bitcoin and really more importantly blockchain, which is sort of the underlying technology that enables Bitcoin. So, here's how I would explain it, right? So what is any currency? The currencies that we use today are called fiat currencies. In other words, they're established really by the diktat of whatever government central bank issues these currencies. Mm-hmm. And back in the day, currencies used to be backed by something that everybody agreed had value. So for example, gold. Now, does gold have intrinsic value? That can be debated. Why does gold have intrinsic value? Because everyone agreed that gold has value. That's really why it has value. We don't eat gold. We don't need gold to survive. We don't need gold to live. But we all agree that it's really valuable. And there's a naturally constrained supply of gold. So that's why we can call it valuable and it can stay valuable because the supply is constrained. Mm-hmm. Now, many decades ago, most developed countries started delinking currency from these sorts of, things like gold. So they weren't backed by gold anymore. They became fiat currencies. And what you're believing now is that the issuer of the currency, the central bank, the country that issues this currency, mm-hmm. has value. And that's why you agree that this promissory note that you call currency will be paid off because the issuer is going to back that, right? So that's the currencies of today. Now, what Bitcoin is it's taking that idea into the digital realm. And what it's saying is, if currencies are just about a common agreement on value, if the dollar has value or the yuan has value because people believe that the US and China will back this, what if not a country, not a central bank, but a bunch of people on the internet all got together and agreed that they're going to back this, that they will trust in this currency, that they will accept payments and make payments in this currency. Does that qualify as the kind of trust that can give something value? And it turns out that that was an experiment, and it worked. And so, you know, the complex parts of this are that, you know, there's a lot of math that's used to constrain the supply, and you can't just have, you know, an infinite number of Bitcoin, so everybody's comfortable that there won't just be, you know, billions of Bitcoin being generated in no time. Those are all details. But really, the interesting thing is, it turns out that, yes, the value is just what you agree on value being. And that's, I think, to me, very interesting.
It is. It's very interesting. And how do we incorporate AI into security, resource management, finance? Well, you just explained that. But in energy without a hacker coming in and destroying everything?
Yeah. So, you know, first of all, you made a comment earlier about whether we like it or not, it's happening. Mm-hmm. And my belief is that technology in many ways is inevitable. I mean, one of the things that I've said often is that if Albert Einstein didn't exist, we would still get the special theory of relativity and the general theory of relativity. We might have had to wait for a few more decades for some other individual to come about that would introduce us to those ideas. Mm-hmm. But in many ways, science and technology are inevitable. So, these systems are being connected to the network now. Banks are online, phones are connected to all our accounts, IoT devices and Alexa and Siri and all these things are happening now with or without AI capabilities. So we are already creating a world, an internet of things that's exposed to hacker intervention, nation states, terrorist organizations, criminal organizations trying to take advantage. Where AI comes in is that the volume of threats on this burgeoning Internet of Things is becoming so large that human security professionals simply can't keep up. You simply can't go out and manually look at every kind of threat and categorize it and develop a fix for it. You have to have smart software that operates at scale and can deal with the kinds of sophisticated threats and the volumes of threats that are being generated today. So, as I cover in the book, The Sentient Machine, one of the chapters is really focused on cybersecurity, and we get into how artificial intelligence can provide shields not only against cyber attack, but also against the manipulation where we see now, you know, elections being hacked, mm-hmm. minds being hacked by using social media content and kind of weaponizing that, how artificial intelligence can certainly be used for bad in those cases, but more importantly, is the only viable way to defend us in these coming times when increasingly sophisticated threats are just a part of life.
You know, there are some heavyweights in the technology sector that are concerned about AI, Elon Musk, Bill Gates, even Stephen Hawking. What do you say to them?
Well, you know, of course, these are very, very intelligent people, and I don't dismiss concerns out of hand. Mm-hmm. But let's think about this. So first of all, you know, there's a group of people that seem to think that you can ban your problems away. You can have countries get together in the UN and decide that they're not going to build autonomous weapons, and then everybody will just magically follow that. And you can trust everyone, and indeed they won't build autonomous weapons. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think that that's the case. I think that there's a whole science of game theory that shows us how people make decisions in competitive situations, and I've written extensively about this. I don't think that in these kinds of competitive situations, you can really trust. So when multiple people can't trust each other, they surreptitiously do what they say they will not do in any case.
Right.
And we don't want to end up in a situation where the wrong people have this technology and the only people that have that technology. So mm-hmm. that's one reason why I believe that you can't wish these things away, you can't ban these things away. The only other point I'll make is that it's not as if artificial general intelligence, in other words, commander data level intelligence, you know, from Star Trek, where AI becomes human capable and then post-human, it's not like that's going to happen next Thursday. You know, the research community has been active in AI for many decades. Now it's developing really quickly. We've made some breakthroughs. But there is still a roadmap ahead of us, and there's a lot of problems to solve. What my focus is that in this time, now I believe that we can achieve AGI decades hence. I believe that that is a possibility. I don't rule that out. But rather than fear it, I would like to prepare for it. I would certainly not like to make it into a bigger or more imminent threat than it is. But in this time, work on things like safe AI and explainable AI, where human beings can understand the rationale for AI systems making decisions so that we can fix them, mm-hmm. or safe AI systems which can prevent accidental problems that might occur if these systems were to malfunction.
We are speaking with Amir Hussain. He is the author of The Sentient Machine. This is a fascinating subject. While I can't imagine a machine becoming malevolent, could it make humans somehow irrelevant? Who or what would control our world?
You know, in just to make it very brief, the two big existential concerns that people have, usually that they'll share with you, one is sort of in this category of these machines will kill us, and the other is they'll take all of our jobs, they'll render us irrelevant, we won't have anything to do.
Mm-hmm.
So on the first one, I think that even without artificial general intelligence, even with the level of technology that we have now, we're already living in a world where unfortunately, there is no lack of malevolence on the part of human beings in any case.
Mm-hmm.
And you pair that malevolence with the kinds of technologies that we have now, mm-hmm. Remote controlled drones and nuclear weapons and biological weapons and genetic sequencing and all of this progress that's outside the ken of artificial intelligence, but is just technology developing the way technology develops. That can be weaponized, all of it. And there is no lack of malevolence on the part of the human race throughout history, unfortunately.
True.
So what really are we saving ourselves from? If anything, many of the problems that these combinations, human malevolence and technological sophistication, can create, with artificial intelligence, we might find some solutions. And as I said before, technology is inevitable. It is neutral. You can use it for good or for bad. But simply stopping technological progress, to me, isn't an option. Because in those situations where you decide to do that, like China did many centuries ago, they built the world's largest ships. They could have ruled the world. But an emperor got it into his head that these ships would just bring bad ideas from the rest of the world and would pollute Chinese culture, and he had all the shipbuilders killed.
Mm-hmm.
And as a consequence, the Chinese economy and the culture of China suffered.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't able to retain that competitive edge, and the Europeans developed that capability. And then on those very ships, many years later, the Europeans ended up on the shores of China and ended up controlling parts of the country. So we can't walk away from technological progress, and I think that that's simply something we'll have to deal with. I don't look at it as something that we need to fear. It's something that we need to understand and we need to get involved with.
Yeah, wonderful. I could listen to you for quite some time. Unfortunately, we don't have that kind of time, Amir. I've got a couple of questions. How far away do you think we are from AI, and where do you see yourself in that mix?
So we have what's called artificial narrow intelligence today. Computer algorithms are already solving perception problems, like recognizing handwriting, like picking out very hard to make out objects in video feeds and automatic face recognition and driving cars. And these narrow tasks that previously only humans could do, AI is doing all these things better. But what's called artificial general intelligence, in other words, not just a specialized capability in one area, but a general purpose capability, the same AI being able to play a game and do a job and trim a tree and, you know, all these diverse things like a human can, that I think is some decades hence.
Okay.
There are many estimates, many artificial intelligence experts have been polled on this. What you'll find is that most people will tell you that it's possible, and it'll happen this century, probably within the next 50 to 70 years. the optimistic estimates people like Ray Kurzweil have been saying for a while, their estimates are literally coming up here in the next dozen years, you know, 15 years. Mm-hmm. So it spans the gamut. But, you know, the key thing to think about is in the grand timeline of human existence, what is an extra 20 years? The profundity of achieving sentience or general purpose intelligence in a synthetic creation is such a seminal moment in history that the last thing to worry about is whether it's 10 years here or 10 years there. The point is, it's possible. We're at the cusp of it, and what an exciting time to be alive.
Yeah, well, I can certainly, your excitement is palpable, so, and kind of catchy. One final thing, and that is, what do you want most for those reading The Sentient Machine to get out of it?
Exposure to ideas. I think that's why we exist. The human race exists to perceive ideas, to know wisdom, to know knowledge. And while for many the ideas in the book might be things that they've come across, what I tried to do that I thought was a little different and a little unique was to combine, it's not a very technical book, you know, I don't get into programming or math or equations, it's written for the common layperson reader. And the idea in the book is to expose you to a philosophical lens. How do we think about artificial intelligence? You know, I talk about the religious traditions, I talk about philosophy, I talk about Camus, I talk about Descartes, but then I also talk about the practical applications of artificial intelligence today, so people can develop a tangible understanding of where all of this technology is taking us. So exposure to those ideas. You know, at the end of the book, if you ask yourself a few questions and if you think that you've got one new thing out of it, I think that's a very big contribution to make in a time and an age when, you know, tens of thousands of books are literally coming out every day. If I have said one new thing, I'm very grateful.
Well, you have to me, and I'm most certain that you have to many, many other people. The book is The Sentient Machine, The Coming Age of Artificial Intelligence. My guest, Amir Hussain, thank you so much for your time. This is fascinating, and I just wish I had more time, but I will be posting all of this information. I'll be posting, of course, the interview as well. And again, thank you for your time.
Terry, what a great pleasure it was to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.